Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A Radio Info Raw Edit podcast. The conversations behind our reports.
I'm speaking with Geraint Davies, who recently left ARN as part of the COVID cutbacks. Gee, how long were you with ARN in the end?
Just over a decade.
Your most recent job was head of iHeartRadio. How long were you doing that for?
We first went over to the US, I think, in 2012, and it launched in 2013.
Well, you're the full bottle on all of this stuff, and iHeartRadio's one of Australia's biggest radio apps. Is it the top three with CRA's radio app and ABC Listen?
I'm not sure of the ABC numbers. We're probably, my last set, we're about four times the size of the radio app. And yeah, and then you've probably got Spotify, TuneIn, and Apple now obviously has radio in it as well.
Yeah, there's a lot in the market. It's very crowded with apps delivering streams and podcasts and catch-up radio. Can that be sustained, do you think, in the long term?
Yes and no. Commercial Radio Australia was actually trying to prevent and doing a really successful job of people broadcasting our streams, so just scraping the internet, finding the URL and then publishing it under their own apps. But it was a bit like whack-a-mole. You know, once you got rid of one, another one would pop up. But I think we got rid of about 35, 40-odd third-party apps that were using Australian radio URLs to rebroadcast under their own banner. So that helped. And I think the push by the ABC, SCA, Nova, and iHeartRadio to get people to use, let's say, the official streaming apps will help. There's no real cost to it from the broadcaster's perspective, other than producing and maintaining their own app.
You talk about those other third party apps. I guess TuneIn is the world's biggest one. What are your thoughts on TuneIn, their business model, and TuneIn in contrast with the official radio apps?
Their business model has changed over time, and I think because globally more and more broadcasters are pulling their feeds off of TuneIn. I mean, the yin and the yang of TuneIn is that they were one of the first organisations to do this. They have this tremendous list of radio stations. They sell that list to developers, so you can buy the sort of TuneIn add-on to your app and then have, you know, hundreds of thousands of radio stations. So it's a sort of go-to for developers. But I think as more and more broadcasters say, no, we're not quite happy with sort of you having our customers and the way you're monetizing them, their influence in certain radio sectors will decline, but will maybe increase in others, because they now do, you know, various subscription services as well for various sports stations. So I think their business model's changing. They'll rely less on terrestrial broadcast streams, and they'll move, you know, to more specialist audio and radio.
And how did they monetize? You said their business model's changing, but at first, anyway, how did they monetize? Was it just inserting their own ads across other people's streams?
Yeah, they used to do a pre-roll. So before the stream kicked in, they would do a pre-roll. But you could ask them to remove that. I mean, they're a bit of a sort of anonymous group, if you know what I mean. Trying to get them to do things is quite tough. So, you know, you'd end up with all other radio stations that come across where you've got breakfast show pictures from breakfast shows you don't have anymore. So they were quite slow to do stuff because of their sort of global scale. But yeah, they used to run pre-rolls. A lot of it was just display ads and that volume game of, you know, 1% of a of click-through on a big number is enough to survive.
Okay, well, let's come back to Australia and the Australian apps, particularly iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio, as you said, came into Australia about 2013 or so, but it was already established in America, so you were really piggybacking on something huge.
Yeah, it wasn't as big. I mean, it was very fast in the US. So there was iHeartRadio app, which was around for a while, but then what happened was Clear Channel Broadcasting, as it was then, now iHeartMedia, bought a music element to it called, and I think the company was called Thumbs Up. So it was when they added Thumbs Up to the radio station that then gave it a real point of difference in the market. And then you also had sort of strategic change of Bob coming along and saying, you know, radio is a national business with a huge reach, and repositioning radio in America as the reach giant that it is, compared to, you know, being big in New York, big in LA, big in Boston and so forth.
I guess when you're selling national ads, then national reach is the important message to give.
Yeah, and even when you look at regional radio, you know, outside of sort of the SCA, a huge proportion of the advertisers in regional are also the same as, you know, metro, because the franchise model of Australia is, you know, every reasonable town's got a Harvey Norman and a Kentucky Fried and a Porto and so forth. So the advertisers were buying regional radio and metro radio anyway. I think SCA has just made it an awful lot easier.
You identified that iHeart strategy of combining radio streams with music streaming services, the rent music model that Spotify and Pandora and others have. So do you think that was the magic ingredient that has made the iHeart Radio app successful?
Not really. I think that you've got to look at the uniqueness of the US market at that time, back in 2011 to 13, was Pandora was growing rapidly and huge. It sort of hasn't achieved everything that it was doing way back then. So there was a huge move to that sort of Pandora genre-based music, and I think that was the key for the US model. And then their event strategy, you know, they became, you know, a global event Goliath, and with the ability to, you know, pull together stars for whether it be festival, Latino, awards, that became a global brand sort of overnight, and put radio back on the map as a relevant and trendy medium.
Is it the combination of the music streaming service with the radio streaming that has helped anyway?
I would say a little bit. The usage of the streaming side, you know, the streaming music side of the app is relatively small. The marvellous thing about iHeartRadio app and other people's app is people use them for live broadcast radio. Literally 70-80% is for some form of linear radio. And the reason for that is usually because you're using apps or web when you're not near a radio. And what's happened in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years is radios have sort of come back into the house via smart speakers to access radio. So the great news is that combination of live speech, pure talk and music is really still an entertainment form that people want to hear.
Yeah, well, that's really heartening. You know, nearly 80% of consumption, in your experience, is still live broadcast radio, just through a different platform. That's very positive for the radio industry.
It is very positive, but I look at some of the I can't remember the CRA figures, but you know we're losing share slowly. So when you look at, you know, the percentage of listening to radio compared to podcasts compared to streaming, I think the last percentage that CRA data from Edison was 63%, 62%. The year before, 65%. Probably the year before that, it was 67%. But it's still 60-odd percent compared to everybody else who's, you know, Spotify's probably down, and Apple are probably down at 15%. But, you know, that's 2 or 3 percentage points every year we might be losing. And that's probably the issue, I think, that we need to address, is to maintain that relevancy as whole generations of people will move, having known nothing other than playlists.
Let's talk about business models. I think we're at a point in radio's history where radio businesses are reinventing their business models. They're reinventing as audio businesses, while acknowledging that live linear radio is still pretty strong. I think the smart companies are also seeing that repackaging your audio as catch-up and commissioning unique audio content as podcasts is just going to be part of the business strategy in the future to make sure that the audience can get what they want in lots of different ways and hopefully monetize all those different ways.
The exciting thing is that, you know, rule of thumb globally is about 10 to 15%, and the growth has only been from like 10 to 15 in the last few years with smart speakers. 10 to 15% of all listening to linear radio is online. You know, this very powerful FM-AM distribution network that people have grown to love with. It's everywhere you want it to be, and it's free. As people move their listening habits more to online with, you know, phones that offer free or zero data, Wi-Fi that's nearly everywhere, etc., etc., you're going to see that radio can move from that broadcast model, is we don't know who's listening, but we do these surveys to sort of quantify that post the event, to a much more similar service to, you know, a Google or an Amazon, where we can tell you significant amounts of data about significant amounts of our audience that put us in the digital audio space entirely. It will take us out of that traditional media set and put us into, you know, fighting against the likes of Facebook and Google.
Well, you must have seen a lot of that data coming across your desk from iHeart app usage figures every month. What kind of things are you seeing, and what can you tell advertisers that makes it worthwhile to them to buy audio in this way?
We know everything about the user that they've told us, and usually that's a pretty basic information. So, you know, your postcode, your gender, maybe your email, and your date of birth. Now, that's fine, that's sort of generic information. But we can then sort of say, okay, well, this person listens to KISS, but they also listen to Triple J. So you can't advertise on Triple J, but you can catch them when they're listening to KISS, and they seem to do that mostly between 5 and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. We also know that this person listens to heavy metal music, so you can make assumptions about, you know, what that person might like. We can track their movements on our own websites. So you can start to merge these data sets in to find out much, much more about that person than just they listen to KISS and their age and their gender.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Are advertisers interested in that level of detail? Were you able to successfully sell that to them?
Early days for all broadcasters in that game. Again, the big issue is the volume of people you end up in each bucket. You know, the more filters you put on something, the less options you have, and therefore you need a very big funnel at the top in order to give the advertiser sufficient volume of audience at the bottom. But I think that's where the radio will become a more dynamic medium over the next few years, where we won't be selling, you know, 300,000, 500,000 listeners to a radio station. We'll be selling very unique audiences of 50 or 60,000. They might be tradies, and we've found out that tradies listen mostly on a Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. to this radio station. So you can advertise there. So those are the sort of uses of the data that will enable us to sell higher cost per thousand, but a smaller audience.
And I suppose you can always extrapolate that back to the ads on the main live-to-air terrestrial broadcast channels too. I mean, if you're buying tradies on a Thursday at 4 p.m., then whether you buy it on air or online, you're still going to reach them if they have that habit.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the key. It's using, you know, currently we're at that 10 to 15% of listening online, so it's, which is still a huge population. It's using that sort of panel to say, well, if these people listen at this time of the day and you want to reach them, there's no reason why that same set of people is not listening on AM/FM. It's the same product. It's everything's the same, so you can make a reasonable assumption that you're going to get as many tradies on FM as you are online.
It's very exciting from a commercial business point of view. The other side of it, of course, we're lucky in Australia, we don't live in a surveillance state, but you know, many countries are. And the one thing you can do without anybody tracking you is turn on your radio and listen to radio without being traced. But now that's all ending.
Yes and no. I mean, in iHeartRadio, there's the ability to, you know, turn off your locations, turn off notifications. So you are basically just a, you know, a gender and a postcode and so forth. And we don't verify those details. So, you know, you could put the wrong postcode. The issue of data tracking will be a societal one. You know, there are already, you know, in the US and Europe, you know, significant privacy legislation either in place or being put in place that will allow the consumer the power they need to keep their data to themselves if they want to.
Streams and apps like iHeartRadio, I think, are the gateway to smart speakers. You know, often smart speakers can't find your radio station.
Yeah, and this is where the size of iHeartRadio in the US and the size of iHeartMedia allows that technology. You know, they have weekly calls with Amazon and Apple to make sure that the, you know, Siri and Alexa work, because they realise that if they don't work in the US, that's not a good experience for the Alexa or Siri user. So that equal size of company coming together on a regular basis. I mean, I think iHeartRadio were one of the first companies that Amazon went to. And if you can imagine that conversation, which is, you know, we're going to put a speaker in everybody's house and we're going to listen to everything that happens there, and then you talk to it and it answers you and gives you what you want. But, you know, that sounds very bizarre when you put it in that sort of way, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. But, yeah, that's the beauty of having the size of technology support for iHeart. But, you know, it is hard, and I go back to the tune-in model. You know, tune-in was the go-to for both Siri and Alexa when they started, because they can just buy that database, put it into their give it to their app developers, and then all of a sudden you've got all these radios. So it would always say, you know, listening to Triple J on TuneIn.
One of the smartest things that our commercial industry did in Australia, CRA, was to put up the radio app and then really negotiate hard with the smart speaker providers to make sure that it was the default app to look at first when people requested a station, and then also putting in many different varieties of name that people could request.
Yeah, and we did the same with iHeartRadio, and, you know, we've got community broadcasters on, and you have the situation where Google, as an example, would use the website. It wouldn't ask anybody what the station name was. It would just use whatever the URL was. If you didn't say exactly, you couldn't find that station for Hell or High Water. But yeah, and also the, you know, Google, Apple, and Amazon, they want the user to find what they're asking for as fast as possible. The original launch of those products in Australia wasn't, other than iHeartRadio, wasn't that great. So they also wanted, you know, the help of the CRA to get that experience more beneficial for their customers.
Let's get to podcast now. So iHeartRadio just kept adding things. You had the music, you had the live streams, then you added the community broadcasters as well as your own. You did some deals with other networks. Some of them came on, some of them didn't want to be on a rival company's app. And then podcasts came along and you added podcasts in as well.
Yeah, I mean, podcast was again from the US. It's seeing yourself as an audio company rather than a radio business. And yeah, we jumped on board the minute they got that tech on. We started adding our own. iHeartRadio is an agnostic platform. You know, there are radio stations on it. There's Nine Radio, there's ABC, there's SBS, there's Ace Radio in Australia, and the same in the US. They've got, you know, thousands of competitive radio stations on their app. And the podcast was just a natural progression to another audio format. The big thing that has happened with podcasting, though, is that, you know, we've now got, rather than just live read commercials, we have that opportunity for dynamic ad insertion.
Tell me more about that.
That allows you to, as the podcast is being downloaded or played, progressively streamed, whichever way the user's doing it, you know, either the ad is dynamically put in, so it's Tuesday and here's the ad that's going to go in, and or you've stitched the ad in to the podcast. But to me, that's now an ad, whereas most 70-80% of all revenue from podcasting prior to this has been with the live read from the announcer. You know, thanks to so-and-so for sponsoring today's show. They're authentic, they're sometimes cheesy, but they're very authentic for those listeners that enjoy that podcast. So now we've got to be careful we're not just putting in ads that interrupt abruptly the listener's pleasure of that podcast.
I think that's a very interesting programming sales dynamic, in a way the same as you get with, you know, a program director talking to sales about any ad. You know, is it the style that's going to fit to the station format? I suppose we know about that in our business. It's just a matter of applying what we know to the new podcast platform.
Yeah, it's going to be developing fast. And the minute you can do, you know, ad insertion, that medium grows up.
Last thoughts about apps and the future of audio delivered in this way. Where's it going?
I think smart speakers have only just started. And I worry that, you know, you may end up with people asking smart speakers for, you know, play me happy music, play me sad music, rather than play me a radio station and or play me the news. The radio station bit may get sort of lost because you want people who want news and you want people who want music. And people who want entertainment, they may choose something else. There's also a lot of screens being added to smart speakers, which, again, is just a competitor for time, ear time with consumers. Apps is just a treadmill of continuous functional and improvement. You know, if I knew what consumers would use as a function if we added it, I'd be a millionaire, because it's amazing what functions you put out which are used and what functions you put out which are not used. It's a problem for radio groups to just keep pace with the change required to keep up with Apple, Google and Amazon. It's a constant running battle to keep up to date.
I suppose with big companies, they've got enough money and resources to do that. But the question is the middle to smaller companies, if there is that constant spend and activity trying to keep up, maybe it's not worth having your own app. Maybe you do have to piggyback with a large competitor, or you just have to give in and give your stream away to someone else like TuneIn, who's doing it and bearing the cost.
I think there are, for that, you know, middle of the road radio group, whether they be in Australia or anywhere else, there are some strategic decisions about, you know, do we want ubiquity of our content, or do we want to monetize our content, particularly on linear radio? You know, those two things can have different strategic outputs.
I want to return to the happy music and news. I think you're spot on there. I think people will ask that. In fact, I was just reading some data this week that people were just asking who won the American election or did Trump win, you know. So certainly smart speakers allow that kind of I guess you'd call it Boolean search, you know, just random search for things that are happening at the moment. So I think you're right. I think people will request, give me the news or give me happy music. Does that mean that we've got to tag and segment our output in many more different ways so that when somebody does ask, give me the news, then the default is ABC Radio News? And then if they say, give me the news about America, then the tag for that story would take them to immediately to a story on the ABC about the American election.
I don't think anybody has really grasped the power of the voice search over the power of, you know, Googling it online, where you get, you know, probably 7 or 8 different options before you have to scroll down, whereas voice is at the moment giving you one. So if your default is the ABC, you know, you're never going to hear 9 radios or 3 AWs news. I see radio groups in Australia already doing that, you know, doing that well. But SCA, Channel 9, you know, they're cutting up segments. I think if you looked at the top 100 podcasts list that comes out, or even the top 50, 15 or 16 of those allegedly podcasts can only be heard on smart speakers. You can't find those in the Apple App Store or normal podcast podcatchers. They're only available on smart speakers, yet we call them podcasts.
The insights that you've built up over these years are very valuable. So I'm sure that people will be knocking on your door for a little piece of your mind on these things.
Yes, thank you for your time interviewing me too.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.